WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
The way of the samurai is found in death. Meditation on inevitable death should be performed daily.
That's Forrest Whitaker as a hitman named Ghost Dog, who follows the code of the samurai in the movie Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. My guest is the film's writer and director, Jim Jarmusch, who also made Stranger Than Paradise, Down by Law, Mystery Train, Night on Earth, and Dead Man. The hitman in this movie lives alone on a rooftop and works for Louis, a small-time member of the mafia who once saved Ghost Dog's life. Louis is part of a gang of losers. In this scene, Louis is told by his mob boss that he has to reveal the secret identity of his hitman.
Now, what the f*** is his name?
Ghost Dog.
What?
Ghost Dog.
Ghost Dog?
He said Ghost Dog.
Yeah, he calls himself Ghost Dog. I don't know, a lot of these black guys today, these gangster type guys, they all got names like that they make up for themselves.
Is that true?
Sure. He means like the rappers. You know, the rappers, they all got names like that. Snoop Doggy Dog, Ice Cube, Q-Tip, Method Man. My favorite was always Flavor Flav from Public Enemy. He got the funky fresh fly flavor. Live lyrics from the bank of reality. I kick the flies, don't maneuver technicality. Do a dope track. I love that guy.
I don't know anything about that. But it makes me think about Indians. You know, they got names like Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, Running Bear, Black Elk.
The film Ghost Dog is both comedy and tragedy, a reflection on the meaning of life and death, and a study in contrast between cultures in America and between the code of the mafia and the code of the samurai. The Ghost Dog character follows the code that he's learned from the book Hagakure, the book of the samurai. How did you come across this book?
The book was actually given to me while I was writing the script. And I had read other books about samurai culture and Bushido. There's another book called Code of the Samurai, which was written by an old samurai. But this book, it's particularly beautiful because it's written in like little aphorisms, and each one is separated by a little Japanese symbol called a mansho. And they're not really hierarchical in terms of content or subject. So you'll have one small text that is a very philosophical, and the next one may be about, you know, how to clean your shoes. And I really like the kind of non-hierarchical guide to being a samurai, and also the form of the book influenced the form of the film, because in the way that those little symbols separate each text in the book, I kind of reversed that and used quotes from the Hagakure as little separations in the film itself, like little breathing spaces, like almost like a little running commentary on what informs Ghost Dog as a samurai. Like, where does it come from?
The Ghost Dog character is somebody who was nearly killed by some neighborhood hoods, and he was saved by this small-time mafia guy, and ever since then Ghost Dog has been the hitman for this mafia guy in return for the favor of saving his life. The Ghost Dog character, you know, in reading the samurai book, reads this line: meditation on death should be performed daily. In every day, one should consider oneself as dead. And in some ways, I think that's almost the theme of the movie, this meditation on death. Tell me why that strikes such a chord for you.
Well, I started the real genesis of the project, and I don't really know why, but I wanted to make a portrait of a character that was a contradiction, that was someone whose life was very violent, who is a hitman, but we would find some reason to respect him or even like him. And in the Hagakure, or preparation for being a samurai, one is prepared for death at any moment, and that's one of the foremost, you know, elements of being a samurai, of Bushido. And why, you know, why that appeals to me, I'm not exactly sure. I'm not very analytical, but I do know that philosophies that consider death as part of life and are kind of cyclical speak to me much more directly than, for example, religious philosophies that are based on being rewarded or punished, you know, in the afterlife.
Well, when I was watching Ghost Dog, I was thinking, you must have been thinking a lot about death, because both Ghost Dog and your earlier film Dead Man are about people who have been saved from death but are facing their imminent death. And in Dead Man, a Native American prepares an elaborate death ritual for this young white man who has been shot and is dying. And this ritual is to create a decent journey into the next world. In Ghost Dog, the Forest Whitaker character has studied the Book of the Samurai and has learned to face death through that. And in a way, by facing death, he also learns how to live. I guess I'm wondering how much reading you've done about other cultures' philosophies toward death.
Well, quite a bit, and not in preparation for anything, but just out of interest. And, you know, these two particular philosophies, in Dead Man it comes from Aboriginal, North American Aboriginal culture, and in Ghost Dog it comes from an Eastern Zen culture. And both of those philosophies are very much concerned with life and death being part of the same thing. In fact, all things being one thing. So I, you know, over the years, I guess I've read a lot of different philosophies from different cultures, but, you know, I'm really not a big fan of religions or philosophies that seem to be intent on controlling people. Like the idea of, you know, I was raised a Christian. I sort of lost that, well, pretty early on when I was told that animals don't have souls, which kind of freaked me out because I had a dog and my dog had a soul. So I also don't, it seems like almost like a game show technique, Christianity. Like if you behave well in the afterlife, you'll either get paradise or you'll get the inferno. It's like, you know, what's behind door number two or door number three. It's kind of an odd philosophy to me. So I have been drawn toward those that consider things to be circular and cyclical.
So you've done a lot of reading. Have you ever immersed yourself in any of the disciplines that you've read about?
No, I haven't. I'm not very disciplined. I'm more interested in the philosophies and how they, you know, what they, how they affect my thought processes rather than, you know, really disciplined. Although there's a guy who worked on Ghost Dog briefly. He appears in the background in a scene and performs a few martial arts moves on a guy that's like trying to steal something from him. And that's Sifu Yan Ming. He's a Shaolin priest from China that lives in New York. And I got a lot of respect for him. And I may study with him on some level in the near future. I certainly would like to, but I haven't started yet. I don't know how much it would be physical and how much philosophical, but he said he would like to, you know, devise some program for me specifically. Some of the Wu-Tang study with Yan Ming, and they've actually given him some money for a prayer room in his school and have been big supporters of his.
So is your interest in studying martial arts to do it as a discipline or to do it for self-defense?
It would be definitely as a discipline. For self-defense, you know, I'd rather just carry a gun.
Which you probably don't,
right?
I'm joking.
Yeah. I don't. No.
Right.
No, but, it's a combination. And you see in Ghost Dog, for example, when Forrest Whitaker became that character, he studied martial arts since he was 10 or 11 years old. And in the film, when he uses his weapons, which are modern handguns, automatic guns with laser sights and silencers, he handles them like a sword, even uses physical movements that are similar to the way a samurai or a martial artist would use a sword. And a sword is an extension of one's arm, which is an extension of one's body, which is an extension of one's chi or one's soul. And so, you know, all those things are completely interconnected in Eastern philosophy and even in the study of martial arts. So, you know, I'm interested in the connectiveness of those things. And if I do study it, it would be, you know, trying to discover those connections.
I don't know if you'll think this is a fair analysis or not, but it seems to me some of your early films, like Stranger Than Paradise, were kind of absurdist. You know, kind of searching for meaning and not sure if there was any, and having a kind of absurdist outlook. Whereas your last couple of films have, like, found meaning in understanding death and facing it.
Well, you know, it's hard for me to analyze those things. I don't. Once my films are done and I've seen them with a paying audience, I really never look at them again. So I try not to, like, I don't know, to analyze my own work. I'm really more intuitive and just like to go forward. So it's hard for me to chart those things or say, you know, what affected you at what point in your life and changed your work in that way. I don't really know. I just try to keep making them, you know, intuitively. So I have no good answer for that.
My guess is Jim Jarmusch, and he wrote and directed the new movie Ghost Dog, The Code of the Samurai. Now, you wrote the part of Ghost Dog for Forrest Whitaker. What was it about? Did the character happen first, or did you decide to write something for Forrest Whitaker first?
Well, I had a vague idea for this character, this desire to try to make a contradictory character who was violent, but we would see something deeper in him and respect him. And that was the very beginning. And then, of course, I started searching in my head, like, well, who can I imagine as this character? And Forrest Whitaker kept returning and returning, and so I called him up and talked to him. I had met him a couple of times briefly, but I called him up and said, look, I have this idea. I want to proceed writing it with you in mind. Is that okay with you? I'm not going to, you know, try to commit you to the project until I have a completed script. And he said, yeah, you know, I told him what I knew thus far. And so I started there, and, you know, what attracted me to Forrest is his presence is somewhat contradictory. He's very gentle, and there's definitely a kind of depth to him that you feel right away, and you feel it when you see him on screen. And yet he's also a big, imposing guy. He's studied martial arts. There's another side to him, and I wanted to get that kind of a balance. And it's a very difficult character to ask an actor to play, a character who doesn't talk much. He doesn't really act out. He's very centered and reserved and reactive. And Forrest is a really, really amazing actor in terms of reacting, which I think is the essence of acting. And just tiny things can fleet across his face and say a lot more than probably pages of dialogue. So I proceeded, you know, writing for him. And in the end, when the script was done, he agreed to do it.
You know, he has one eye that's kind of swollen and hooded, and, you know, and it looks different from his other eye. And I think it's a real asset for him. I think he knows how to use his eyes in such a way that sometimes that more swollen eye makes him look more vulnerable and bruised, and other times it can make him look more kind of threatening and unpredictable.
Yeah, that's true. And, and I was somewhat aware of that just not designing the shots, but I was aware of that from different angles, too. But it's really something, I'm not sure how aware of it he is or not, but, you know, there's a kind of asymmetry that has a real emotional effect in his face, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In your acknowledgments at the end of the credits, you thank Jean-Pierre Melville, the French filmmaker. Tell me about his influence on you and on this film.
Well, Melville made very, very beautiful French gangster films. And what I really love about Melville is that he did mix different things together. Like, his films are very, very French in a way. Ghost Dog quotes Le Samurai that starred Alain Delon. But there are a lot, I really love all of his films. Like, he will have these French gangsters dressed in a very American style with sharkskin suits, and they drive through Paris in big American cars. And he kind of mixes things together. There's something, even his film Le Samurai, of course, was a big inspiration for Ghost Dog, because he uses a kind of Eastern style, the center of the character of Alain Delon is essentially a samurai. He doesn't go as far as Ghost Dog does to give you references as to, you know, what code he follows, but he definitely refers to, you know, an Eastern way of thinking or of acting. And I don't know. I really love the way Melville mixes things together, and he's very particular in that way. But there were other films, too. There's a film that was also very inspirational, my second favorite hitman movie of all time after Le Samurai, which is a film called Branded to Kill, a Japanese film from, I think, 1967 by Seijin Suzuki that is a really bizarre, beautiful mixture of many things. It's a black and white CinemaScope film, and it really verges at times on surrealism, but it is also certainly a gangster film, and it pretty much ended the career of Seijin Suzuki with the Japanese studio that he worked with because they considered the film to be just too strange.
My guest is Jim Jarmusch, writer and director of the new film Ghost Dog. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jim Jarmusch. He wrote and directed the new movie Ghost Dog. Ever since Life is Beautiful, I've been, you know, wondering about you, Jim Jarmusch, because you're the person, I believe, who first used Roberto Benigni in an American film, and that was in your film Down by Law. So I consider you, like, partially responsible, for better or worse, for unleashing Benigni on America. So would you like to reflect on his success since that time?
Well, you know, we remain really good friends. We work together. We made a short film after Down by Law with Stephen Wright and Roberto called Coffee and Cigarettes. And then he was in a film that I made called Night on Earth. And we plan to do something again in the future, but it's not really set up yet or what it will be. But, you know, Roberto is such an amazing character. He's an amazing person. And really, nothing that he could do would really surprise me. So when Life is Beautiful was, you know, so such a big success, and suddenly there's Roberto at the Academy Awards, you know, part of me was surprised, but another part of me was not surprised at all. I mean, I just, it's hard. I don't know what Roberto might do next, you know. He's just really an amazing character.
Did you see his film?
I did, yes.
Like it?
Well, it's very difficult for me to be really objective because Roberto and Nicoletta Braschi are really close friends, and the intention of the film was so loving and beautiful that, you know, I reacted emotionally in that way. But at the same time, I'm not sure it's like the type of film I might have reacted to in the same way if I was able to be more objective. It's hard. Mm-hmm. To really say, to analyze it as a film. But I know what their intentions came through very strongly, and, you know, it was a very loving, beautiful message in their film.
Another famous casting moment in your personal history, in your movie Mystery Train, which was set in Memphis, where Elvis fans and Sun Records fans are paying their pilgrimage to Memphis, the person playing the ghost of Elvis is Paula Jones's husband, Paula Jones of the sexual harassment case against President Clinton.
That's right.
You must have been mighty surprised when that story broke.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. I think actually Paula Jones came to the set one time to get pick up her husband, I think Steve. But I don't know. I don't know if they're still together. I haven't really followed their lives. But yeah, that was pretty odd. But I thought you were going to ask me about Screamin' Jay Hawkins, who appears in Mystery
Train. Well, he passed away recently.
Yeah, and that really hit me hard. He was like, I considered him like an eccentric uncle that you dearly love and thought would outlive you definitely. You know, I just never thought we would lose him. So that was like, to me, losing a kind of national treasure and someone really that I really loved. So that was a hard one.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, Screamin' Jay Hawkins was, his idols were like Caruso, and he always wanted to, and Paul Robeson, you know, he always wanted to sing opera. And right before his death, he was preparing to finally record an operatic record. So that was kind of sad. That was always his dream, and he didn't get to do it.
Jim Jarmusch wrote and directed the new film Ghost Dog. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Jim Jarmusch, director and writer of the new movie Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, starring Forrest Whitaker as a hitman for a mafia family.
Now, the music soundtrack for Ghost Dog was composed by RZA, who was one of the founders of the hip-hop group The Wu-Tang Clan. And I like the soundtrack score a lot, and it's kind of like this minimalist hip-hop techno stuff that has this melodic line that almost reminds me of like an old folk melody. It's a really odd mix of sounds. What did you tell him you wanted?
Well, I've been a big fan of his work since the first Wu-Tang record, Enter the Wu-Tang. And, you know, I told him that I wanted his kind of, I don't know how to describe his music, but it's very, his Wu-Tang earlier stuff is very atmospheric and dark and yet very delicate at times. And, you know, he does mix a lot of really interesting things together, and his sense of rhythm is very particular. Very identifiable, although a lot of, you know, DJs and producers have imitated him. I can still tell you what's RZA. It's like listening to Monk or someone with a signature. And initially, that's what I told him, and he had agreed to do the score, actually, before we shot the film, to do it. He didn't start writing it until after he saw a rough cut of the film. And it's funny, because the first music he brought to me was, in my mind, not appropriate for the film. He wrote very, not conventional, but a kind of score with synthesized strings and really amazing music, but I thought it was more appropriate to like a John Woo film or like a Hong Kong action film. And then I told him, yeah, but I want that more dark, sort of edgy or more minimal stuff that, you know, that you're known for as the RZA. Because he's also known as Bobby Digital, and he makes different music if he's Bobby Digital than when he's RZA. So then he said, yeah, I understand, and then he reappeared a few weeks later with incredible music, exactly what I wanted, and then a couple weeks later he gave me even more. In the end, we had too much music for the film.
Let's hear some of RZA's music from the soundtrack of Ghost Dog. Music from the soundtrack of Ghost Dog. My guest is Jim Jarmusch, who wrote and directed the film. In Ghost Dog, Forrest Whitaker lives on a rooftop, and he's created a little shack on the rooftop, and he lives there with a lot of pigeons. He sends messages by carrier pigeon, and he loves these birds. I really only know of carrier pigeons through movies, particularly on the waterfront, which the Marlon Brando character, you know, has pigeons, right, and really, you know, loves them, and they bring out his sensitivity. have you ever, like, actually seen a rooftop with carrier pigeons?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, not carrier pigeons. They have been extinct since 1914. But, right behind where I live on the Lower East Side, for years and years there was a coop in the building just behind mine, and I used to watch them often, especially on weekends when he'd fly them on Saturday and Sunday mornings, and it was very, very just visually interesting, because when they flipped directions, depending on how the light was hitting them, they would often flip from being backlit to frontlit, and therefore from black to white, and would fly in these swirling patterns. And, it was some old Italian guy that had them and was always smoking cigars out there and waving his flag to bring them back down. And then in researching the film, I met quite a few different pigeon guys that keep pigeons, both in Manhattan and up in Spanish Harlem in Manhattan and in Jersey City and other places, so in Brooklyn. And boy, I'll tell you, it's a really weird subculture of people who keep birds.
What's weird about it?
Well, they're just such strangely different kinds of people, you know? I met these guys up in Spanish Harlem. I'd really like to make a documentary film about them. They have this wild rooftop setting in an abandoned building that's like a kind of drug building, and they have like some kind of Rottweiler up there that they say is very gentle but is chained up because she'll jump on you. And they have maybe 600 birds, and they just really, two guys, really interesting, wild characters. There are birds that will, homing pigeons that will return to them. So those are the birds they choose to sell. Like they'll sell them for $5 and a couple days later they're back, you know. So they were really fascinating. Also across from them in Morningside Heights, there are some peregrine falcons that are nesting. And they sometimes come and snatch a bird from their, you know, their flock of pigeons while in flight. And they were really, you know, fascinated by that. It was horrifying to them, but they said, you know, it's all part of survival. We got to give in order to survive as far as our birds go. So, you know, sometimes we watch some falcon come and snatch one of our birds away.
It seems that now there's a lot of young independent filmmakers who make that independent film and then land that big commercial deal and get catapulted into the world of major motion pictures. You haven't really done that world. Would you like to stay out of it or just keep going your own way?
Yeah, I'm happy being whatever I am, marginal, or as long as, you know, I am tired of being called, my films being called quirky, I must say. I think any critic or reviewer who uses the word quirky in reference to anything that's like slightly left of the mainstream should be hunted down and, I don't know what, shipped off to Gilligan's Island forever or something. But
what's so irksome about the word quirky?
I don't know. Every review, any film or record that's like alternative or whatever label they use is always called quirky. And I'm starting to get, you know, I'm starting to get ready to, I don't know, take action against the word quirky.
Well, watch out.
Yeah, I know. Like, do you ever wake up and just feel quirky? Like, I don't know. I got a quirk in my neck. I don't get this word quirky. But anyway, I lost the question.
About making it into...
Yeah, because I'm just too damn quirky.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just too damn quirky for that. No, I didn't calculate, like, I will make films like outside the mainstream, or I will make this type of film. I just intuitively, I love the form of cinema, and I'm just trying to learn how to do it and how to use it. And, you know, this is a world where almost everything is valued, or its value is assessed in the marketplace, which doesn't interest me. And I don't know, I'm just not really... I think I would make very bad commercial films, or I'd end up in jail for having people tell me how to make a film. It's not my strength, that's for sure. So I'm going to keep trying to do what I do as long as I can, and eventually if they stop me, I don't know, I'll figure out something else to do.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thanks a lot for having me. It's nice talking to you.
Jim Jarmusch wrote and directed the new film Ghost Dog. Coming up, the creator of the TV series Wonderland. This is Fresh Air.